Hello, Brad here. Just to say we're super proud that the Friday 5pm podcast is sponsored by the Malt Miller, the UK's best home brew store.
We use the Malt Miller for all of our homebrew experiments, as well as tapping them up for advice and binging on their awesome YouTube channel all the time.
That's why whenever we release a homebrew video, we put a recipe kit live on the Malt Miller, so you can brew with the exact same amazing ingredients that we did. The same ingredients used by pro brewers.
So alongside the Malt Miller's nitro-flushed hops, cold-stored yeast and milled-to-order malts, you can pick up recipe kits for our 5 Points Best Bitter, Russian River West Coast IPA, and now the fastest beer in the world, a hazy session IPA that goes from grain to glass in less than 48 hours.
Sign up to their newsletter at tinyurl.com/Malt Miller to get 5% off your first order. With the Malt Miller's amazing customer service and Johnny's 48-hour recipe, you could order the ingredients on a Monday and be drinking the beer by the weekend.
Speaking of which, it's Friday.
It's 5pm.
So enjoy this week's Friday 5pm podcast. It's Friday, it's 5pm, it's time to put down your pen, keyboard, throw your laptop out the window. I don't quite know what we do at Friday 5pm these days, other than listen to this lovely podcast. How you doing, Bradders?
Yeah, I'm right, man. Pretty good. I'm on my holly bobs at the moment up in North Norfolk, the land of Nelson and Alan Partridge. So
back up. Lord Nelson is from North Norfolk.
I think he's from Norfolk. When you go into Norfolk, there are signs everywhere that say Nelson's County. So I don't know if he's from North Norfolk.
He'd have sounded a lot less impressive once you heard him speak with a Norfolk accent.
I don't know, man. It's quite a majestic accent.
You have to say that, you're there.
You're going to get some hate now you've said that. I'm with the Norfolk folk. They're great folk. Some folk in good beer ingredients up this way as well. Went past the big Adnams grain store, just randomly on a I think it was an A road yesterday. Hard to tell up here because an A road looks like a B road, and a B road looks like a sort of track, single
a C
track.
Road. Oh, farm track. Blimey. Okay.
Yeah. So I've had a few. We've only been here a few days. I've had a few hairy sort of passes with like combine harvesters that are just flying down these little tiny lanes with very little regard for anybody else. So it's kind of wild. It's the wild, wild north.
Have you seen any grain fields? They must be forming now, but a bit green probably still.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I haven't seen anything that looks that high, and I've been going quite fast, but there's certainly lots of fields.
Why would you,
Johnny,
take in the view?
It's very, very flat around here, as if anyone might know if they've ever been to Norfolk. I believe it's the flattest part of the UK, right?
I have no idea, but it is famously flat.
I think it's the flattest part of the UK. It's probably not as flat as Holland, which is, as far as I know, the flattest country in the world. But maybe flatness leads to great beer, because I don't know, does flatness lead to great beer? Who knows, Johnny? But it certainly leads to fields.
I can't see there being a link.
No. It's weird, isn't it? Like, you go somewhere that's very flat and the sky just looks humongous. I'm getting sort of American vibes from just sort of driving around when the roads aren't covered in hedgerows, which is a lot of the time. But when you actually get out past the hedgerows, so wide, such a big vista. Very impressive. So anyway, I'm off to Norwich today, which is going to be very exciting. Going to have a look around the medieval bit, the market bit, and they've got an absolutely gigantic antique sort of market thing that I discovered last time I was here. So I'm quite looking forward to that. And I might drink some nice beer while I'm out as well.
Of course. Well, antiques and beer, that's you in a sentence.
It's me in a sense. That would be my dream job. Like the guys that drive around in vintage cars and then go and buy antiques. Except it'd be better if I could drink as well and get someone else to drive me in the vintage car.
Hey, well, when we sell Craft Beer Channel to AB InBev, maybe we'll have the money to get you a vintage car and a driver.
Great stuff.
That's the plan.
What have you been up to this week?
So I've had a busy week. I had my first barbecue last weekend.
Nice.
That's always exciting. It was big on our Patreon Discord forum. Apparently, we all love ribs.
Ribs are pretty good, universally good.
And when you cook it over smoke as well, it's extra excellent.
Very animalistic.
Exactly, yeah. Caveman / woman vibes.
Totally.
And we were drinking lots of very delicious beer, including some smoked beer, which actually, in retrospect, was probably overkill. And then we had an amazing Imperial Stout from Heretic, which was kindly gifted to me by the guys at Maltmiller when I was down there a couple of weeks ago. So that was a big finish. I went to bed with a big old smile on my face and woke up with a big old frown. And then, this week, so I've been all over the place. I was at Yonder yesterday for book research. Me, Stu, and Gareth, who's the head brewer up at Daya. They were doing a collaboration. I think I can say that. They might not have announced it yet, but they're brewing an elderflower IPA. So we're out foraging for elderflowers all over sort of the slightly lower area of the Mendips. We parked up in a leisure centre.
Nice.
Which is not your classic start to a foraging trip, but we walked down this, it's just a cycle path. And along there, not only did we collect 5 kilograms of elderflower, but like Stu was just pointing and going like, those will be sloes in a couple of months. Those are wild strawberries. That's raspberries. We found wild oregano, wild thyme. What else did we find? Went to another place and found wood sorrel, which tastes like apples when you eat it. Just like, it looks like a giant clover, but tastes like apples.
Yes.
It was a really fun day, just picking stuff off the floor and hoping the dog hadn't weed on it, essentially, is the biggest risk, because it's not mushroom season.
Well, talking of wild time, it sounds like you had a wild time. And
we did.
Yeah, man. Like, that guy is an amazing forager. He's probably, I would say, almost like the Ramiers of the craft beer world. that leisure centre, you've got to keep that a secret, because that's obviously a good spot. So don't give too many clues as to where that was.
Yeah, won't say which one it was, yeah.
They'll get rinsed by all the other foragers. They'll all be going down to that leisure centre and going, I know this is where Stu goes, and go and get me some nice elderflowers and some whatever else, wild thyme.
We did. There was a jogger that went by with his dog, and as he went by, because we were there, like Stu had his ladder out, Gareth was doing the lower branches, I was taking photos. There were bags and bags of elderflower, and a guy, as he jogged past, just went, "Leave some for me." So clearly, he's aware of the joys of that particular path.
Nice. Do you think he was genuine in his foraging, or do you think he was just doing like a dad joke?
I don't know. I think he was. I think he was a forager.
Nice.
I think not your classic dad doesn't necessarily know that you can just pluck elderflower off of a tree and then, make a cordial or a beer with it. I think he was into it.
We did have we had a pretty incredible elderberry beer on our live show last week from Stu and the crew. So
that was a beautiful beer.
Was it? It's not the time of year yet for berries. They're still flowers at this point.
Well, we managed to have some wild strawberries. So they're coming out, and I think some raspberries might be if they're farmed, but not the wild stuff. So wild strawberries are just about to come into season, I think. But wild raspberries, you have to wait until later in the year.
Nice.
So yeah, sounds we had the tiniest strawberry. It was like the size, like about the size of a pea.
These are just kicking about, like literally just all over the place.
I wouldn't say all over the place, the wild strawberries. I think, they're quite a delicate thing, and they grow really close to the ground to start with, so they probably just get trampled on without people realising. But certainly, like, wild thyme and sorrel and all this stuff, if you go to the right places, it's absolutely everywhere. Although Stu was saying it's a little bit of a weird season, because we've had such weird weather recently. A pretty mild winter, and then a really wet and shit spring, and then whatever this is, which is thunderstorms / hottest day of the year, then more thunderstorms, then hottest day of the year. I think nature's a little bit confused.
Yeah.
And it needs to prepare for the fact it's only going to get weirder, I think. But it's good for the hops. I've seen Hukin's Hops, who I follow on Instagram, seem quite happy with the crop so far. So good news hop-wise for the UK, at least.
Ace.
There we go. And then the only other thing I did this week was we recorded the next Bubble episode, which is with we found him through Instagram. It's called Pillow Heat, but I mean, Rob's a fashion guy more than me, but he's been chatting to him and following him, and it's a shop on Carnaby Street made with only USA-made Vans, so pre-1998 Vans clothes and specifically shoes. So talking about fashion with him, it's going to be a great little pod out in a couple of weeks.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Pillow Heat. So
have you been to the shop?
No, man, I've been following him on Instagram for years. He didn't have a shop, I think, when I started following him. So,
right.
Yeah, that's cool, though. Good to hear he's doing well.
Pretty ace. Well, yeah, he has the shop rent-free above the main Vans shop. So they just love what he does and gave him a space, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, that'll be live in a couple of weeks. Should we talk about the video?
It's only our biggest video in ages.
Yeah, it bloody is. That took us by surprise. We thought the build would be the big thing because YouTube loves a good build. But yeah, it's absolutely flying. It's already nearly caught up with the first video. I think maybe it's intrigue around a mountain IPA, which is interesting because that's what piqued our interest and gave us the idea as well.
Yeah, man, those mountain peaks. Trying to get through the misty mountain peaks.
Yeah. And it does, like, this interest in this form of brewing, it does kind of back up what I've been saying, and I feel like people are looking, like, not to lose that kind of juicy element of beer, but to make it drier and more bitter and more kind of crushable generally. So I feel like maybe that is the way that New England brewing is going to go, back towards where it started with The Alchemist to some extent, with, you know, dry finishes and big, big hop finishes. This summer, I'm going to be hosting talks at the Manchester, Bristol and London Craft Beer Festivals, giving festival goers the chance to attend tutored tastings, rare beer pours, meet the brewers and even guided tours of the bars. These three festivals are the highlights of my events calendar, featuring some of the world's best breweries with delicious restaurant pop-ups, great music and a really welcoming party atmosphere. It's the third year I've been hosting the We Are Beer Tastings table, but for the first time, I'm delighted to offer all of our listeners, viewers and Patreons £5 off a ticket when you use the code CBC5. Just hit the link in the description to buy. See you there.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, all these things are sort of cyclical. And, you know, hopefully people are going to start heading back a little bit towards a slightly less sweet and back, you know, back towards a bit of bitterness would be nice. Mm.
It would be. I mean, we all go through cycles with beer and like different things and stuff. But I'm definitely moving away from sort of the sweeter double IPAs at the moment. Although I said that a couple of weeks ago, and then I was at Cloudwater and they gave me a can off the line of a double IPA with Highland Park, and it was one of the best things I've ever tasted. So maybe I'm coming back into it again. I don't know. It's hard to tell. But yeah, the response to the video has been absolutely amazing. The beer was absolutely fantastic. Like, I keep wanting to say, like, one of the best we've ever done, but we've only done five, and all except for maybe the Christmas beer have been great. Well, actually, no, and the double red IPA had some diacetyl, which wasn't ideal, but, you know, better than those two, duking it out with our best bitter and our New England, but eminently more crushable than probably all of them.
Yeah, it was, and, you know, like, I can't believe I didn't think to take a growler with me, on that record day, because yeah. Kind of left some good beer there.
Well, I've got to go back and tidy up, and we're going to store it away properly. So maybe when I go, I'll take some growlers, yes. Maybe even some bottles and cap it off and bring some back. And we've got to plan where we're headed next. We have some very exciting news. I got confirmation this morning, very early in the morning, a little hint for you, as to who our next collaboration is going to be with. So that is dead exciting, like world famous, world class, incredible people, amazing brewery, great style. I'm super excited and slightly intimidated by who we confirm this morning is going to be our next collab.
Are they in? They're in for the next collab, are they?
Yeah, In theory, stick to our original content plan, they'll be the next one.
Interesting. Well, let's hope your house and everything gets sorted out super double quick.
Yeah, that, or if anybody knows any industrial space we can move it into, because it would be a bit cheeky to rock up to another brewery and then collab with one from another country. So need to maybe find some industrial space we can do it in. But I mean, the house move has had some very small bits of progress happening, but we've been here before, so I'm not going to get too excited. What about the comments, Brad? Did you find anything?
Yeah, so had a good one from Ben Davis about the video. Just said, bring on more brewery brews. I say love all the behind-the-scenes brewery happenings while you're knocking out your batch of beer while the big boys do theirs. So cool.
It was pretty cool, that sort of Russian doll
thing. I think there's something really great about actually going to the place, somewhere that you love, that makes great beer that you really respect, and you know, wheeling up your brewery and saying, can I get involved, please, sir? Can I have some more yeast or whatever it might be that you haven't brought with you? And I just think it's awesome. Like, well, you know, it's a really cool idea. We've sort of adapted what we were going to do because you know your house is taking a bit longer to get the deal done. But I think out of it, we've birthed this little baby called Porter Brew, which I think is going to take us on some great adventures. So I'm pretty excited about the sort of prospect that you know, Ben Davis is saying is great here. So I think there's a real taste for it, the kind of us getting out there into other brewery spaces and showing a bit behind the scenes. And, you know, getting direct input from the brewers while we're there, I think is also awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. Like, it wasn't really in the video, but like every now and then Jager, who's the head brewer and an amazing broadcaster as well, she'd sort of dip her head round and check on the gravity and all that kind of stuff. So it was cool to feel completely sort of swept up into a brewery's day to day, which is obviously very different to how we used to have to do it, which was over Zoom. My dream is maybe eventually we'll be able to sort of take the Porter Brew on tour, you know, take a load of fermenters, get in a van, go visit a couple of breweries at the same time, and then bring home, you know, four fermenters full of amazing beer. That could be a pretty cool episode.
Yeah, I did see someone on our Patreon forum. By the way, you can join our Patreon forum for as little as $1 a month. one of our, I can't remember who it was, but someone said a really cool idea, which we're kind of already thinking about, but it was kind of like almost making a train of different Porter Brew units. So we were already thinking about a kegerator, and then someone said about a wild unit with a cool ship on, which had a great
always
name
kept
for
downwind of the clean stuff.
Yeah, they had a great name for it, and I've totally forgotten what it was now, but it was like a take on Porter Brew, but it was like, I don't know, Wild Brew or something. Can't remember what it was. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Sounds awesome. So the comment I found, which I enjoyed, Thomas Sell said, great video, incredibly informative and interesting. You're welcome, Thomas. Was wondering, is biotransformation dry hopping not a thing with mountain IPAs? Which is a great question. So biotransformation, just super quickly, is where you where the yeast itself starts chomping not just at the sugars but at chemical compounds in the hops that you add to create new flavor compounds, which is anecdotally and maybe scientifically where some of the very juicy flavors come from in these New England IPAs. Now, it's a pretty new discovery, so we don't know everything about this process or how much of it happens. But one thing that's coming to light is that not a lot of yeast strains actually have the capability to do that. So a lot of sort of the anecdotal evidence of biotransformation is exactly that. It's probably not happening. It's probably some other process or combination of processes, which is what we discovered when we did our New England IPA with Verdant. We found out that they don't add any hops during warm fermentation, which is when you're supposed to do it to get biotransformation. And they said that if they get any of that process, it's just through the hefty whirlpool addition at 80 degrees. So actually, this sort of DDH approach, depending on your definitions of DDH, but dry hopping twice isn't necessarily a thing in a New England IPA either. I was chatting to Gareth at Daya, and he said they don't do any warm fermentation additions either. But I do think that juicy element, you know, there's no reason there shouldn't be any biotransformation in Mountain IPA. We did a hefty whirlpool. We used the verdant yeast, which might be capable of it. I'm not sure. So we didn't try to avoid it, and we didn't want to avoid any of those juicy flavours. We just wanted to dry it out a bit further. So compared to our New England, it was, I think, 3 points drier, 3 gravity points drier, and whack up that bitterness, and that's the main difference. And then obviously a slightly lighter grist. So biotransformation, I think, depends on the yeast, but it happens in all the beers that use that. It's not sort of specific to New England IPA. It's just an important part of it, potentially, or at least the flavours that we associate with it. I think there's going to be a lot of studies in biotransformation to come, and we'll all learn a lot of things. And hopefully, I assume all the hop growers are looking into that, and the yeast suppliers as well. I know Lallemand have done quite a few lectures on it with Robert Percival. Maybe if I can find an interesting one, I'll stick it in the show notes. So yeah, thank you, Thomas Sell, for the interesting question. All I've done is ask more questions, to be honest. And speaking of more questions, we have a more question from Sean Brewer, who's basically the third host of the podcast at this point. If you want to send in a question, you can, just by sending either a written question or a recorded question to craftbeerboys@gmail.com.
Johnny and Brad, it's Sean Brewer here, and I've got another question. This time it's on beer branding. So something the craft beer world does really well is those eye-catching beers. The aesthetics of the bottles, the canistry, the artwork on the bottle, all makes a really strong brand. Particularly Brooklyn are a good example of this, where they've got the iconic B, and when they're all lined up on the shelf, it's something to really behold. Looks really good, and draws people's attention to picking them up. But my question is, what are the key features of good beer branding? So labels, what really makes them pick one over the other? And are there any bad examples you can think of where maybe there's a dodgy innuendo, there's too much going on in the labels, and they're just not quite there in terms of branding? Loving the work, guys, and loving beer.
So Bradley, this seems like a question for you mostly. I know you love the Brooklyn branding, and we have some merch that's based on it, but what other great branding do you love, and what makes a good bit of branding?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like you say, obviously I love the Brooklyn. I think that is the archetype of you know, beer branding, building a successful beer brand, you know, getting one of the all-time greatest graphic designers in the world, Milton Glaser, to design your brand for you and make it quite a simple, iconic mark is a good shout. I wouldn't say there are too many other brands actually that are that powerful in the beer world of having that sort of simple, elegant brand recognition.
Budweiser's probably...
That was where I was going. I was going to say a lot of the big macro guys have got it right, but they've obviously had a lot longer to kind of do this stuff. So, you know, Bud in particular, another bit of merch that we've got. I sort of begrudgingly do admire their sort of branding. I mean, it's pretty frigging awesome when you look at a can of a Budweiser, and it's, you know, it's just great. All that kind of, you know, iconography stuff on there, and almost looks like kind of an old warrant or something. It feels like quite grand and like it's not the champagne of beer, because that's who was champagne of beer? That's Miller, isn't it?
That's Miller Light, Miller but High Life.
Again, they're also kind of awesome. So I do, and Schlitz and all these kind of like classic Americana macro beer things. I really do admire those. But in terms of craft beer, I think, you know, the way they approach it, a lot of them is it's kind of like the new record cover, and you can go absolutely bonkers with it. My sort of trends that I like are more things that are minimal. So you'd have like your little logo that you recognize. So whether it's your Cloudwater, your Tuol, your Alligator Tugboat guys, forgotten their names.
Pressure Drop.
You have that little tiny nugget that you always recognize. And then they use the rest of the can as a canvas. And they, you know, go pretty abstract with kind of abstract art and just kind of, you know, beautiful colours and patterns. North are great at this as well. All of these sort of guys are the kind of things that I really like on a shelf, where you've just got pattern and colour going on basically, and then that little kind of brand recognition with a little icon somewhere on there. Omnipollo, I think, are just awesome. I think almost, I'd say the most rock and roll in terms of artwork. I think, you know, that man is a great artist, and I love psychedelic art in general. I collect 1960s psychedelic posters, so I really love what they do. And you know, if I'm honest, to sort of, I don't keep that many beer cans and beer bottles, but I do keep a few Omnipollo bottles from time to time because they're just beautiful. They've just got, it's kind of, I don't know what the ink is they use, but it's kind of almost like screen printed onto the bottle. And it's, I really appreciate it, Johnny. I think Carl makes just great stuff.
It's interesting. I think a lot of brands, you know, brands like the, you know, the heritage sort of macro brands over in the States, they built a brand like it was all about trying to appear bigger than they were, grander than they were, more, you know, historic than they were. And at the moment in craft beer, it's all about seeming as young, as transient, as hip, and as of the now as possible. And that's kind of cool, and it's been cool for a couple of years, but it does leave me really wishing that somebody would invest a little bit more long term in the branding that they're going to do. And the guys that I love, just like you, like, I think Pressure Drop are one of the best. They every can is completely unique, but every can, when you put them next to each other, look like part of a greater identity. And I think Daya do the same and Track do the same. But then, like, you know, I used to love the Cloudwater branding when it was all sort of seasonally commissioned art on a can. Yeah. And now it's all photography. I'm not so wild about it, and it feels a lot of the it's lost that kind of seasonal development, and it feels a bit chaotic now. And I think the brands that I love are the ones that have got a thread running through it all.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, I used to really love the Dig Bruco little stubby bottles that had the, they were like dipped in glow in the dark wax, green wax on the top. And the labels looked kind of like sort of punk or heavy metal posters, like drippy text. Just like really lo-fi. So I kind of appreciate that because it's quite different from anything else. It almost looked like kind of like a fanzine on a bowl, which was really cool. So I guess anything that distinguishes from, you know, everyone else. It's so hard to be different these days because everyone's trying to be different.
Yeah, there's 2,500 breweries in the UK or 8,500 in the States all trying to be different. It's pretty hard, yeah, with that kind of volume.
It's tough. Like, I don't know, man. I think, you know, like you sort of touched upon there, I think we might start to see people who are a bit more established start to go a bit simpler with their branding. 4Pure got a lot of hate for kind of rebranding, but it does look a lot cleaner. We won't really talk about BrewDog right now, but they obviously did a huge simplifying rebrand maybe a couple of years ago now. And I actually thought that looked pretty, like, quite a sensible thing for a big company to do.
I think it does show that they're looking outside of the craft beer market. And I do have an issue with a lot of the craft beer brands. They sort of market to the people that are going to know already what they're buying. And I think that's a slightly damaging thing to do. It would be better to market to the people that don't know exactly who you are. And I guess that's what 4Pure tried to do. But I think they went wider than market. Like, I think the branding itself is perfectly nice. It was the messaging that came with it that was beyond broad, while still also trying to say we're a premium brand. It's like, you can't be broad and premium, I'm afraid. That and craft, those three things don't really go together, which was sort of my issue with it. But definitely, I appreciated that. And I think Camden have always done another a good job of branding themselves.
That's where I was going next.
To other people, right?
You know, before they sold, I think Jasper and that lot, they had a, I can't remember the designer there. I did meet him, and he was a really cool guy. I think it was a guy. I don't know. It's in the mist of time, Johnny. I always, when they first came out, I thought these guys are sort of riffing on the kind of Brooklyn simplicity, Americana, like just real simple, iconic, you know, good amount of negative space around stuff, so it just pops. Not a lot of texture, just like colors and like nice typography. And I really admired that from them. And I actually think that, you know, I would say 50% of the reason why they were sold for such a lot of money and were seen as such a good investment is because the brand was so clean, so different, so iconic, so confident and assured that, you know, the big boys looked at it and thought, the name's great, Camden. Everyone knows the sort of the recognition of that part of London and its association with cool throughout history, but also, you know, the kind of sort of slightly Americana flair to all of their simple sort of branding. It just made them a real prospect, I think, for being bought out. And that's something that, you know, branding is so powerful. And it, I think people often underestimate the value of the designer, certainly in what we get paid for coming up with brands for people. You know, we're not particularly valued, maybe like any other part of somebody's working in the beer industry or any sort of industry that's public facing. You know, you can kind of people almost think you'll work for free. Because there are so many designers out there that are willing to work on cool brands and stuff, that it's become, you know, quite hard to get paid for doing work, Johnny. So it's like if someone said to you...
It's true across all creative industries. Yeah, it's like creative, if we wanna, you're seen as privileged to do it.
Yeah, we want you to write a book for us, but can you write it for free? Because we're cool and we'll publish it for you or whatever. It's kind of like that. So it can become a little bit tiresome, shall we say. But I mean, you know, me as a creative person, you as a creative person, we do it because we love it. And you know, it's great when you get a project that you can get your teeth into, and yeah, I think that's why we keep sticking at it, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and in the hope that one day we'll build a brand that will sell for millions.
That's it.
I mean, yeah, you look at Camden. I totally agree. They bought the brand as much as the liquid. Yeah. You know, the recipes are rarely secret in the craft beer world anymore. And I think the same for Beavertown. You know, there are much better breweries out there and were at the time that Beavertown sold. But, you know, the work that Nick Dwyer did and built, you know, not single-handedly, but had a huge influence across the craft beer space in general, across the world, his work. And he would have been a major reason as to why Beavertown got the price that they did.
Totally.
When they sold to the company that will not be named and started brewing beer that will not be drunk. So yeah, thank you for the question, Sean. Thank you for the answer, Brad. That was fascinating. And yeah, if you've got a question, like I say, email it to craftbeerboys@gmail.com and we will stick it in the schedule as soon as we can. This has been a long podcast, so I'm going to end it right there. Join us next week. We've got a video with the amazing Unity Brewing coming up, which is a great video and involves more foraging. So look forward to that. We'll see you on Wednesday. Love and beer. The Bubble and Friday 5pm podcasts are brought to you by the nerds behind YouTube's Craft Beer Channel. You can watch over 400 mini documentaries at youtube.com/thecraftbeerchannel. And if you love what we do, support us via Patreon and get access to merchandise and our amazing Discord forum, a positive and welcoming space for everyone who loves beer, food, and homebrewing. Love and beer.